Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again. And as usual, I'll start off by reminding you that just because you hear certain strategies for tax savings or certain investment opportunities that involve multifamily real estate in private partnership form, private syndications, we refer to them as, that's not your invitation to go jump into the deep end. Please connect with your existing advisors and discuss what you thought you heard to see if they think, since they would know your current facts and circumstances, or we would hope they would, whether they think that what you heard is something that might benefit you in the near term or the long term, especially if you're behind on your savings for retirement. You will be hard pressed to find an investment segment that will theoretically and historically achieve above average returns. All that said, we have had a rough patch here in the last couple years. But if I look back over the last 20 years since I started investing in this area and consulting, we're way ahead of what we might have gotten with other investment opportunities. Predominantly the stock market, I think, would be the one that most people would otherwise be invested in. Have the ability to help you if you need assistance, if you don't have advisors. But first, I need you to go to our website at beaplanner.com. And if you'll notice there at the top row of the web page with the links, you'll see a forms link. If you'll click that, go to that first step one client profile form that if you complete that, it'll give us enough information so we can assess the likelihood that we may be able to sync up with your needs with respect to this area of understanding tax laws and retirement plan taxation using your retirement plan funds for investing in these real estate private partnerships. And then trying to understand whether or not you've got a significant gap between where you currently sit and what you're going to need through retirement, because we got a long way left in most of our cases compared to yesteryear. Average male, according to the IRS life expectancy tables, has an 85 to 86 year life, and the average female should live to 87 or 88. And so that's a lot of monthly bills to pay between now and then. And don't forget, I know the single biggest thing that seems to get overlooked when I speak to people about their retirement savings is they forget, when they tell me how much they have, that they really don't have that much because it's not all theirs. And for those of you that don't have your money in Roth vehicles, that's ROTH, Roth IRAs or Roth 401s, Roth Solo Ks, which is a self-directed model of the 401, the one that we like. But if you're in pre-tax accounts, you're lucky, or you will be lucky, if you see half of the money that's in what you're thinking now is your retirement account, because you haven't factored in the IRS's piece of those dollars. And it's probably going to go up. I'll have more to say about that here a bit later on the show. But in any event, if you want assistance, start with filling out at least that step one client profile form. Step two and three would be great if you could take the time. It'll help us more fully understand your facts and circumstances. And then schedule a call with us. You can do that right from the same web page. You'll see at the top right, call. And if you'll click that, you can go schedule a call. And again, I'll be happy, gratis, no charge, to look at your info and tell you how we might be able to help you achieve those goals and objectives. You know, I finally got around to adding, well, two things. I added the video that I mentioned, I believe it was a week ago. I hope it was only a week ago. It may have been 2 weeks ago, the one by the Arizona Republican that I really like, his analysis on assorted deficit-related math. He's really good with the math involved with our nation's cumulative debt and how it's really driven us into a bad spot. And you won't like the numbers that he gives you, but they are the numbers. And the more you know about them, the more you'll realize why I constantly harp on suggesting you get your money converted over to Roth. If you can execute the Roth conversion, aside from the tax that you're going to pay near term, which is a, at this point, it's pretty much a known quantity, it beats the heck out of not knowing what the rates are going to be down the road. And there's no question the rates will be as much as double. David Walker, the former comptroller of the U.S., has been beating the drum, warning Congress and anybody else that would listen. He's the former U.S. comptroller. I mentioned that just so you understand. The man understands math. And he used to say the tax rates would need to go up. Well, it's not just him. He wasn't the one that made those calculations. The Congressional Budget Office did a study back in, I believe it was 2009, if I remember, delivered the report that Congress sought, asking how much would we have to raise tax rates to fix the deficit problem. And the answers they came back with, translated, I could tell you the bracket percentages if it mattered, but, well, it's okay, it's easy. The 10% bracket at that time would need to go up to 25. The 25% bracket at that time would need to go to 63. That's percent. And that's the incremental tax rate, tax bracket. The 39% bracket would need to go to 88%. Striking. And that was then. That was 150% increase. Now, Mr. Walker, just watching a video he had posted this past week, is suggesting that 200% is going to be more likely to achieve a scenario where we don't literally run out of money. And I know you're thinking, well, gee, Nathan, how could we run out of money? Well, let's look at it another way here. Each year we collect about $5 trillion in tax receipts. We spend about $7.1 trillion. You can do the math. That means for every dollar that we're collecting, we're spending $1.39 to $1.40, if you want to round. And that's what it's been for a while. And CBO, again, the Congressional Budget Office, theoretically the bipartisan referee in Congress, you know, they score every piece of legislation that's being contemplated by Congress, and the amount of deficit each year that is projected by CBO for the next 10 years, this would be out through 2034-35, is about an average of $2.1 trillion per year. And so when you compare that to how much of the discretionary budget we have left, the annual budget, and discretionary is simply the small piece that we can argue over. It's not already mandated. You know, there's many things already before Congress ever starts arguing and fighting over whose pet projects are going to get included in the budget. They have to allow for the trillions that's already mandated. So there's all sorts of mandatory expenses that we have, and you know, without going into all the detail, it's things that can't be, you know, statutorily they're already baked into each year's budget, can't be changed. Well, I'm assuming they could be if they had just an overwhelming level of support, but maybe not, because again, statutorily, many of them are already baked into the spending. But in any event, the important thing that you need to understand is that by the year 2028, 2029, or 2030, all depends on what the economy does between now and then, what the interest rates are on our borrowings. There's a number of things that will dictate which of those years we run out of the discretionary budget. But in any event, there's something will have to be done. It will be more than a shouting match between the Democrats and the Republicans. You know, the Democrats want to tax the wealthy. The Republicans want to quit giving away foreign aid. Those are the two big things that are consistently mentioned. And yet, both of those will matter not. They could do both of that times two or three, and it wouldn't move the needle hardly at all when it comes to our current deficit. And so at some point, the math will dictate the fact that we can no longer spend money. And when we can no longer spend money, part of which would be the interest on the debt as we keep borrowing. By the way, I know many of you probably realize, but it's always good to refresh our collective memories, the current cumulative debt that we have up through this minute is literally, we just passed the $37 trillion mark here in the last, well, it looks like it may have been yesterday, perhaps. We borrow about $6 billion a day, and we're sitting at $37 trillion, $2 billion, 633. So maybe we passed it earlier today. I mean, it is 11 o'clock, so that would be about half of a day. Well, if it's business hours, look, amongst friends, we can call it what we want. It's a half a day, and so we just went over the $37 trillion mark. So congratulations, your share, my share, and every other taxpayer's share now has climbed over the $320,000 mark. It's $323,000. And I understand we're not individually going to be making those payments, but it, just to put it in perspective, that's $323,000 attributable to each of us as taxpayers. It's over $107,000, almost $108,000 when you look at the debt per citizen. So that's man, woman, and child versus just taxpayers on the $323,000. So, you know, you, again, you can shed the political parties. It won't matter when we can no longer pay 100% of the interest on the debt. The proverbial crap will hit the fan, and you won't be able, or we won't as a government, be able to sell near as many treasury bills, or if we can, they're going to be sold at much higher interest rates, and it indeed will be a calamity. So in any event, the reason I'm bringing all this up is because we're going to talk about, there's three articles that I put out on the site earlier today, actually, and one of them is on, and this one was from April 29th. So we'll start with this since it goes back a little ways. Oh, I tell you what, we're already sitting here just past our scheduled break. Let's go ahead and take the break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about three CRFB articles. That's the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget bipartisan watchdog. And the first one is putting some perspective on what the extension of the Tax Cut Jobs Act 2017, how large that is in terms of dollars, and I guess some might argue in terms of being a necessity, but we'll read through that together. I'm not sure, but I'm thinking CF or CRFB is probably against that extension, even though, you know, I think Trump has pointed it out pretty clearly. If we don't do it, we're going to put a big increase on small business as well as other taxpayers if we let these provisions expire. Anyway, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man, be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just starting to discuss the reconciliation package. Well, actually, yes, it is part of the reconciliation package. But we're talking specifically about the component of trying to extend the expiring parts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act as part of that bill. And it and again, this is supposedly a bipartisan view, but let's just say sometimes the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget teeters a little left when they do their analysis, but you know, they like the Congressional Budget Office, don't go out of their way to project any of the positive side, the revenue increases that might happen, the tariff collections, the other monetization of federal assets that might occur. So take it for what it's worth, but they are in large measure pretty accurate. But anyway, they're saying that the extension, and they're not the only economists that are saying this, but they're saying that the extension of the expiring provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act would or could reduce revenue by nearly $4 trillion through fiscal year 2034. We estimate, again, this is the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, estimates that this is as large as the entire Social Security shortfall that also occurs in 2034. The trust fund will be depleted at that point, should be exhausted. And that's for Social Security. Medicare's is different. We'll talk about that here today as well, provided we have time, because we've had two new reports just issued by the respective Medicare and Social Security trustees on the, it's their annual report they do on the financial status of the trust funds for each. But in any event, let's focus just on this reconciliation bill for the moment. Based on the most recent Congressional Budget Office forecast, the long-term outlook, that's their 10-year forecast, which is updated typically several times a year, but for sure, you know, the beginning of each year. Let's see, the Joint Committee on Taxation, this is another office of government that also does their own estimate. The Joint Committee on Taxation estimates extending most parts of TCJ would reduce revenue by $3.9 trillion. So that's the, I guess, the offset of not, or the offset of allowing certain deductions to continue is that the revenue or tax receipts goes down. So through 2055, the Social Security shortfall and revenue loss from the TCJA extension will both approach $20 trillion before interest. That's significant, obviously. And I guess these numbers are annual. That sounded, I'm not quite sure how that math works. I'm reading this for the first time, in case you couldn't tell. And I'm going to argue that it almost doesn't matter. These numbers are so big. You would think that if you were a member of Congress, you'd have a hard time looking your constituents in the eye when you're continuing to fund certain monstrosities in the annual budget. And I know, you know, some people look at that annual funding and say, well, you know, it's only $50 million. It's only, you know, $2 billion chicken feed, you know, compared to the rest of the budget. Well, that's the line of thinking that's put us in the position we are now. And when you talk about reducing revenues by $4 trillion and you've got trust funds running out of money, 2034 is not that far down the road. And not only that, you know, it's akin to turning an aircraft carrier around, you know, if you're out to sea, in terms of getting programs whittled down or additional efficiencies wrung out of the existing resources we're spending. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. And obviously, you can understand there's millions of lives that are affected too. It's not just a hard, cold, this is what we're going to cut type decision. So in any event, let's see, I was just looking, I've got a nice little graph. By the way, this is on our website. I think I mentioned I loaded both the Social Security Trustees Report and the Medicare Trustees, and the website, you can get to it either at baplanner.com, click through on the show link there at the top, and then when you get to the Be a Planner show page, you can go up to the top right, the resources link, and go to the news section. But in any event, let me keep going down this article. But that graph that's, or the graphic that's in there, makes it appear like those numbers we mentioned are annual amounts. If you're going to get to 19.8 and 19.4, that's an extra $40 trillion in collective deficits between the TCJA extension and Social Security cash deficit. A final reconciliation bill could add more or less to deficits than a full extension of TCJA. The House reconciliation instructions allow $2.8 trillion of borrowing through 2034, which represents more than four-fifths of Social Security shortfall. The Senate instructions, on the other hand, allow $5.8 trillion of borrowing. CBO recently estimated that a package roughly consistent with the Senate instructions, if made permanent, could increase primary deficits by more than $28 trillion through 2055 on a dynamic basis, about 1.5 times the size of the Social Security shortfall. These findings are roughly true on an annual basis, not just a cumulative one. Okay, so that's what they're saying at this point. I still don't quite see that math, but maybe if I had time and I could look at it 18 times, it might click. But in any event, Let's see. These findings are roughly true on an annual basis, not just a cumulative one. By 2035, for example, Social Security faces a 1.2% of GDP, that's gross domestic product, cash shortfall. That's similar in size to the 1.1% of GDP estimated impact of TCJA extension and smaller than the 1.6% of GDP dynamic estimate impact of a bill based on the Senate plan. And by the way, this article is based on, they mention here that they were reviewing a JCT or estimates on the JCT extension from a letter to lawmakers on April the 3rd. So there's been some movement on some of the provisions of the reconciliation bill, but I think this is in large measure still pretty accurate. Let's see, annual TCJ costs. Well, this is more comparison of those two roughly equal in extended or larger increased deficits that get up almost to $20 trillion each. Scary. Let's see. I think that's enough on the TCJA. Now, let's go take a look at the Medicare, the analysis of the 2025 Medicare Trustees Report. Again, this is put together by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And by the way, Medicare is essentially just exploding right now. I was looking to see if their article or the report mentions it, but it's somewhere in, I believe it's 11,800 people a day that are coming on to Medicare through, I don't know if it's the end of this year or next year, but it doesn't go down dramatically. I mean, I think it gets through the baby boomer period. But I tell you, it's a double whammy. I mean, it's not just the number of people, it's the medical cost. And it's just crazy. Well, I was scanning this article real quick to see if it had the annual number of people being added to the Medicare rolls. I don't see it. I may run across it as we read it. But the Medicare and Social Security trustees released their annual reports on the financial status of the trust funds. Our report, that's the CRFB, says that, they've got a separate report that they've issued. This is their analysis. The Medicare trustees project that the Medicare Hospital Insurance Trust Fund will be insolvent in 2033 with a 75-year shortfall of 0.42, that should be read as 0.42 of 1%, so not quite half a percent, to 1.28% of payroll. Meanwhile, total gross Medicare spending will continue to grow. This year's report finds, the hospital insurance fund will run out of reserves in 8 years with projected insolvency date in 2033. That's when today's 57-year-olds first become eligible for the program, and today's youngest retirees turn 70. Upon insolvency, spending will be cut by 11%, which could reduce access to health care for many seniors. That's statutorily baked in. It's just like and Social Security, and I'm sure when we pull that article here in a moment, it'll remind us that, you know, if we don't fix the trust balances that come 2034, that our Social Security checks, I believe it's 2034, we'll confirm that, they'll be cut 23% to 25% across the board. Anybody getting a check will get one that's 23% to 25% less. There's several unknowns in the projections, the interest rates, et cetera, that allow that to be a range. The Medicare costs will continue to grow rapidly. Gross Medicare costs have risen from 2.2% of GDP in 2000 to a projected 3.9% in 2025. So they've gone up, as a percentage, it's not too far from going of doubling. And they're expected to increase further to 6.2% of GDP in 2050 and 6.7% in 2099. Let's hope for some medical technology that makes these numbers unachievable, although they're obviously not going up at quite the same rate if the 2050 to 2099, it looks like it's reversing the trend. It's still increased, but not nearly as much. Medicare's outlook has worsened since last year, with the insolvency date moved up by 3 years. The shortfall increased by 20% in total spending. And total spending in 2098 will be 0.5, that's half of 1% of GDP higher. The deterioration is largely due to higher than expected expenditures for hospitals and hospice services, as well as spending on physician-administered drugs. Medicare's outlook might be far worse than projected. Under the alternative scenario crafted by the chief actuary, Medicare spending will rise to 8.8% of GDP in 2099 rather than 6.7%, and the hospital insurance 75-year shortfall would total 1.28% of payroll rather than the 0.42 of 1% of payroll number that we mentioned earlier. As the trustees show, the Medicare program remains costly and is on an unsustainable path. Policymakers should adopt reforms soon to improve the financial health of the program, especially by reducing wasteful spending and lowering the overall cost of health care under the program. Let's see. Upon insolvency, the program would only be able to pay 89% of its cost, necessitating an abrupt 11% payment cut. That cut would grow to 14% by 2049, likely leading to a disruption of services for seniors and individuals with disabilities who rely on the program. So 2049, that's not as far away as some of us might think. And for us 65-year-olds out there, that would mean, I guess, if we lived to 90, that would be about that time. Let's see. Total Medicare costs are high and rising. Total cost of Medicare, including parts A, B, and D, has grown significantly from 2% of GDP in 2000 to 3.9% 2025. The trustees project continued cost growth. We've already mentioned those numbers. A significant contributor, and this is an area that I think you probably can count on seeing some significant changes in. There's already been changes, but I'm thinking there's going to be a downward change in the spending that will be made available. A significant contributor to Medicare spending growth is the Medicare Advantage program. Medicare Advantage offers privately managed but government-funded alternatives to traditional Medicare and currently covers over half of all beneficiaries. By 2034, it will cover 58% of beneficiaries. As we have written before, the federal government pays significantly more for each individual enrolled in Medicare Advantage than it does for individuals enrolled in traditional Medicare, mainly due to a tactic known as upcoding. Total spending on Medicare Advantage is expected to grow from 1.8% of GDP in 2025 up to 2.9% in 2034. These percentages of GDP, I mean, this is an amazing drag, if you will, on GDP, you know, being available for other things in our economy. This is a lot of money, and this doesn't count all the younger people that are on, you know, traditional, well, as traditional as healthcare can be these days. Lawmakers have many options to reduce Medicare spending, many of which have been discussed in our Health Savers Initiative. That was another study that the CRFB issued a while ago. Let's see. Well, I tell you what, I don't want to get in. They do a further discussion of the differences from prior years to the current and future years. But I want to go talk more about the Social Security report. Let's see here. What time do we have? Well, we don't have as much time as I was hoping. We will pass on our last break. We will not do that break. Instead, let's get my Social Security article up here. Analysis of the 2025 Social Security Trustees Report. And again, this article was released a couple days ago. The trustees find that both Social Security and Medicare are within a decade of being insolvent and face large imbalances. We knew that. We've known it for a while, but this will put some numbers to it. Social Security is only 8 years from insolvency. The Old Age and Survivor Insurance Trust Fund is projected to go insolvent in 2033 when today's 59-year-olds reach their full retirement age and today's youngest retirees turn 70. At that point, retirees will face automatic 23% benefit cuts under the law. This is what I mentioned earlier, and actually it could be slightly higher. If the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Fund borrows from the Disability Fund, the trust funds will be depleted by 2034, leading to a 19% benefit cut. Social Security faces large and growing imbalances. Social Security faces cash deficits totaling $3.6 trillion over the next decade, the equivalent of 2.7% of taxable payroll or 0.9% of gross domestic product. Annual cash deficits will grow to 3.6% of payroll, 1.3% of GDP, by 2050, and to 4.9% of payroll, that's 1.6% of GDP, by 2099. Social Security faces a large actuarial deficit. Over 75 years, Social Security faces a 3.82% of taxable payroll actuarial deficit, the equivalent of $26 trillion on a present value basis. This shortfall is the largest in almost 50 years and nearly twice as large as it was back in 2010 when we first started having people beat the drum about how bad Social Security's future, how bad their finances were deteriorating. Social Security's 75-year insolvency gap increase relative to last year's projections from 3.5% of payroll to 3.82% of payroll. Half the deterioration is due to the passage of the Social Security Fairness Act, which allows some workers to partially double dip between Social Security benefits and state or local alternatives. This was big in the news here, I don't know, what, 6 months ago, where some of the municipality employees that heretofore did not get to tap Social Security benefits to a certain extent were now going to be able to participate in Social Security. Time is running out to fix Social Security. No kidding. Policymakers are running out of time to enact necessary fixes to head off trust fund insolvency. The longer they wait, the fewer policy options will be available, and the harder it will be to avoid abrupt changes to taxes or benefits, or to phase in changes that give workers and retirees time to prepare. Social Security is barreling towards insolvency. If policymakers fail to act, they will effectively be supporting a 23% across-the-board benefit cut for all retirees in just 8 years. So, you know, when you hear the Democrats and Republicans throw barbs back and forth about, well, you know, they're wanting to cut Medicare, they're wanting to cut Social Security for our seniors. Well, this will be a very difficult issue for them to avoid, both sides, because this is what's going to happen if they don't, in a bipartisan fashion, I would argue, act in a way that turns the ship around. Fortunately, according to CRFB, there is still time for policymakers to enact pro-growth solutions that protect the long-term viability of the program and that give participants time to plan and adjust. The Social Security's Old Age and Survivors Insurance, the OASI, trust fund, as we mentioned, becomes insolvent in just 8 years, 2033. So let's see, what are we suggesting some of the solutions are? Let me scroll on down here. We don't have much time. Well, they're talking about, you know, raising Social Security age. That almost doesn't matter. The other thing that's been pitched, I'm sure it's still, here, let me real quick. Social Security trustees recommend lawmakers address the projected trust fund shortfalls in a timely way in order to phase in necessary changes gradually. Phase-ins would be nice, and give workers and beneficiaries time to adjust. Timely action would broaden the options available to policymakers, including targeted adjustments and pro-growth reforms. According to trustees, lawmakers could restore 75-year solvency with the equivalent of a 29% payroll tax increase, a 22% reduction in total benefits, or a, so these are either or, this is not combined. So either a 29% payroll tax increase, that's a lot of money coming out of a paycheck, a 22% reduction in total benefits, or a 27% reduction in benefits for new beneficiaries if they act today. These are all fairly stout increases or decreases, as the case may be. I tell you what, jumping the payroll tax, I guess that's the proposal that, like Medicare, would tax someone's salary in its entirety. There would be no ceiling or no cap. It would just be, which it almost is now for most earners in America. I believe it caps at 179, if I remember right, 179.3. I may be off on that. But bottom line is, if you earn more than that, you're going to pay, under the proposal like this, you would pay Social Security tax on your entire salary. Delaying action until 2034 would increase the size of necessary adjustments by 15%. In that year, taxes would need to be raised by 34%. Benefits cut for all beneficiaries by 26%, or some combination. Boy, I tell you, that's going to be an interesting election when you go out to, I guess it could happen between now and then, either all at once or incrementally. But geez, that's going to be tough for those politicians. Thoughtful trust fund solutions would not only prevent deep across-the-board benefit cuts, but improve the protections offered by the program. They would also bolster economic growth. Okay, it's more of the CRFBs getting on their soapbox. Well, I wish I had a few more minutes, but we are at the end of the show. Appreciate you listening in, and we shall return on Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on AM 700. KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.